the literal translation is Life of the Free Air, which kind of has this feeling of room to breathe in it, right? And so at a very basic level, with the pandemic around, that's exactly what we need. I mean, the whole idea of social distancing is to give us room to breathe in a time where we're so limited with what we can do, what we're able to do in a healthy way, especially with groups of other people. I mean, the safest place we have right now, besides our own home, is the outdoors. And the other side of it, I would say, is you don't have to get in your car and drive to the mountains, or you don't have to find the outdoors only in the majestic landscapes that we sort of associate with hiking and whatnot. You can hike in your own neighborhood in the middle of a city, and you're practicing that idea of Fridus Liva. You're finding something new in your own backyard. And I think that's part of what I've found really helpful in this time of isolation, is that if you tell yourself to look for something new every time you take a walk in your own neighborhood, even if it's just around a couple blocks, the most familiar things suddenly become exotic.
You have this kind of great example of that, you know, that idea that you don't need to travel way out into the mountains to do this, that you can kind of do it in your own neighborhood, even if you live in a city. Tell me about that. What was that example?
For those of us that were involved, the highlight so far of the COVID era for us was my house here where I am now was being remodeled. And my partner Lily and I were living with a dear friend of mine, Scott Davis, who actually grew up in Anchorage. And we were jump roping, and through the trees across the water as we were jump roping, we just stand in place looking out that way towards the east. And you could see a green light, you know, and we would kind of watch that light. And we, at some point or another, came up with this harebrained idea to figure out where that light is. And we thought, what if we tried to walk there? And we decided we're going to do a night walk and find our way to that green light. So no Google Maps if we could help it. If we got totally lost, we were like, okay, we can pull our phones out. But we set out and made our way to about where we thought it was. And we got to the light eventually. It took us about 3 hours, about 6 mile walk. So then I called Lily, who was waiting at home. We called her and we said, okay, we think we're there. We're going to hit the button. And she went outside and looked across from the house where we started. And we hit the button. I said, tell me when it changes. And she told us when it changes, and it changed as we spoke. And we knew we were at the right place. And it was the most bizarre feeling of accomplishment for something so meaningless that I think any of us had felt. You know, the intention, simply setting that intention of finding that destination and making that, insisting to ourselves that that was suddenly an exotic thing to do, even though it was, you know, essentially a suburban stoplight in Seattle. It became magical, you know, and it gave us something to look forward to. And, you know, you can map that metaphor onto whatever you want. I mean, you pay attention to something in a new way and it becomes wild or majestic or magical in a surprising way.
And sort of funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, in that article, just to kind of borrow from that a little bit, there was kind of a discussion there of maybe a different side of this, that people might just hear this as like, you just need to go outside. And they brought up another Norwegian saying, there's no bad weather, just bad clothing. But there's kind of some problems with that sort of thinking, right?
Right. Yeah. And part of what catches me is like, okay, there is such a thing as bad clothing if you don't have, for example, the economic means to get the fanciest new, you know, Gore-Tex jacket or whatever to protect you from the weather. And so it kind of depends where you live. You know, Norwegians have this luxury in a way of being one of the richer societies in the world. And so a lot of them do have access to better clothing. But in other situations, like you're in Seattle or I imagine parts of Alaska, I mean, you can't guarantee that everybody has equal access to the best gear that will protect you from some of the harsher elements. You can't just say, yeah, put good clothes on and you're set. You have to make sure you have the good clothes. And that's not a fair economic assumption, I think, for a lot of people. And so if we can find ways to distribute material and distribute the right kind of gear in an equitable way, I think we'll be in really good shape. And in Norway, that's part of where it starts. Through the first, you know, 4 or 5 years of school, kids spend a lot of time outside, no matter what the weather. If you come to a Norwegian kindergarten, you get the clothing you need to be outside. So if a kid comes and doesn't have access to the finest, you know, snowsuit that's going to keep him or her warm, they will be provided with that, generally speaking. And so the resources are distributed from an early age in that way. And so there's that, you know, there's that economic problem. And it's not so simple. The other thing is getting out in the mountains too requires transportation access and things, and not everybody can do that or take the time off for that matter, right? All these factors come into play when we just assume that everyone can just enjoy the outdoors in exactly the same way. And that is a problem, I think, as a society, we have to confront a little more fully. Friluftsliv is supposed to be the most egalitarian thing in the world, since the earth is everybody's, and we get to walk on it no matter who we are and where we come from. And it should be anyway. It's clearly not, but it should be the most open space that we have.